Dr. Emily Perper is an award-winning registered nutritionist. She has a PhD in nutritional sciences from King's College London, where her research focused on the effects of plant-based foods on diabetes treatment. Her research has been published in high-impact scientific journals, as well as in the form of post notes informing UK policy in food and nutrition. Emily's research now focuses on gut health, where she leads the science department of Yakult UK and Ireland. She's considered one of the leading experts in her field and is known as the nutrition reporter on Instagram, a gut health hub to feed you with the latest evidence-based information on gut health and nutrition.
Emily, welcome to the show. What a pleasure to have you here.
Oh, thank you so much, Ari. The pleasure is absolutely mine. I feel really honored to be asked to come onto this podcast. Thank you so much.
Well, you know, when we spoke earlier in the year, it's crazy how, you know, how fast time passes by, but I really enjoyed the conversation and I knew, okay, Emily has to be on the Sano Your Gut Knows podcast one day. I'm so glad we made it. And, you know, particularly because we are going to discuss and talk about a fascinating topic and space, which is gut health, nutrition, all the myths around that. And, you know, you have a lot of knowledge on the space. So actually the very first question I would love to hear you talking about is how we define gut health, right? It's a very general term. And sometimes, many times we get the question about, okay, is it what I eat? Is it how my poop looks like? So how would you define gut health? What does it mean?
I think that's a great question. And I totally agree. It's this very broad term at the moment. And it's very much been picked up, I'd say, by popular media, as well as social media, nutritionists and their audiences. But, you know, what does that actually mean? And in research, there's actually no core definition for gut health that exists. The term itself simply refers to the entire digestive system, so from the mouth all the way through to the other end, our bowel. And recently, actually, in the research, it was defined as basically this absence of gastrointestinal symptoms and disease, which is really helpful in a clinical setting for practitioners. But my focus really is on gut health, quote unquote, research. And instead, in that space, what we focus on is actually how healthy your gut microbiota is. So for those of the people that are listening that don't know, your gut microbiota is this collection of microbes. So things like bacteria, fungi, viruses that are living throughout the gastrointestinal tract. And originally, we just thought that these tiny microbes were merely involved in the digestion of food. But we're actually now discovering that they could really hold the key to unlock so many of the health concerns that we experience today. So, you know, not only do they assist gut movement and function, but they make vitamins, they make amino acids, hormones, even help absorb certain nutrients. They can activate and deactivate medications and toxins. They break down fiber. So fiber is this carbohydrate that we ourselves can't break down as humans, and instead our gut microbiota do it. And when they do that, they produce these useful substances called short-chain fatty acids. And then so much more beyond sort of digestion, our gut microbiota, they protect and defend us against sort of harmful bacteria. So put really simply, the good bacteria in your gut microbiota will compete with your bad bacteria for space and nutrients, and they'll stop sort of the bad bacteria from colonizing and taking over down there. So as well with that, the good bacteria will produce these substances that protect you against infection. And speaking of infection, your gut microbiota also train your immune system. So we always think that our immune system only kind of kicks in during when we've got a cold or flu, say, but it's actually constantly ticking in the background. So just you and I sat here, you know, our immune system's working, and it's actually our gut bacteria that is powering that, because between 70 to 80% of your immune cells actually sit within your gut. And it's there that your gut microbiota communicate with your immune cells. And that gut microbiota, they're not just communicating with the immune cells, they're doing so much more as well. They're communicating with your brain, your skin, your lungs, your liver. So in other words, you know, this thriving gut microbiota can be seen as really the conductor of the orchestra to your health. So I think this gut health term is so broad, and it is so much more than just the digestive system. And I just want to touch on that a little bit more if I can, just to explain then, well, what does a healthy gut microbiota look like if it's doing all of these tasks? So how do we define it really? And so although I've listed a lot of functions and tasks that the microbes do down there, the extent to which those activities will happen will depend on the composition of the gut microbiota. So really simply, the healthier your gut microbiota, the more efficient it will be at performing those tasks. So Ari, you're probably thinking, okay, I need a healthy gut microbiota. What does it look like? How do I get one? I feel like I'm the bearer of bad news constantly saying, you know, we don't have these definitions. But again, when it comes to a healthy gut microbiota in the research, we don't have this sort of perfect gut microbiota composition that exists. And that's because our gut microbiota is completely unique to us. So it's as unique as your fingerprint. So in the research, we've seen that your gut microbiota, Ari, my gut microbiota, it will only ever be 40% the same on average as anybody else's. And that's even true for identical twins. But what that then means is if we lined up all the healthy people in the world and we looked at their gut microbiota composition, they would all be completely different. So that makes it really difficult to say, okay, this is the composition that we should all be striving for. But instead, what we do know is important is basically this balance of the bacteria living in our gut. And it's about the importance between the good, the bad, and the ugly. So the good bacteria, obviously, the bad bacteria, but we're probably thinking, what's the ugly bacteria? But the ugly here is basically referring to commensals. And these are really important. I always feel quite sorry for them because they never get the limelight, but they're so vital for, you know, metabolic activity and just the normal functioning of the gut. But they don't get the limelight like the good bacteria because they're not associated with any health benefit. And when you maintain a balance of all these three, the good, the bad, and the ugly, we're basically in this state which we call symbiosis, which is a state when the bad bacteria essentially can't thrive and multiply in our gut microbiota. Now, although I said that, okay, we don't have this healthy composition, we're looking for a balance, there is one other key thing that we can strive for a healthy gut microbiota, and that is diversity. This is a characteristic that we do see is key to a healthy gut microbiota, for lack of a better phrase. And the way I love to describe this is you essentially want your gut microbiota to look like a rainforest. If you imagine a rainforest is filled with diversity, it's got loads of different species, different birds, different plants, and they're all flourishing in this one ecosystem, all in balance with one another. And it's not just kind of like about who is there, so the bacteria themselves, but how are they all working together in harmony? And if you imagine in a rainforest, that's exactly what that ecosystem is. Everything's thriving and flourishing and all working together in harmony with one another. Whereas it's a very different story to say in my garden in London, which is, you know, as I step outside my flat, I've literally got a patch of grass, which has, there's no diversity there at all. There's one species and that's it. And that's essentially what we see in individuals that aren't so healthy. Those with certain conditions like colorectal cancer, obesity, and certain gut disorders, they have this gut microbiota composition that is far less diverse. And that's when they're in this state called dysbiosis, which is essentially not in that balance. And instead, it's a tipping of the scale towards the bad bacteria versus the good. And I just think this is such an interesting area of research when we talk about gut microbiota composition, because it's getting us to start asking these questions that could changing the gut microbiota composition of these patients that I've just mentioned lead to better health outcomes for them. But we can now also ask it even more broadly with the general population. So if we start looking after our gut bacteria, Ari, we'll and caring for all of those living microbes inside of us, can we as well see improvements in our health? So it's it's a really exciting kind of research space to be a part of.
Wow, this is so fascinating. And I'm kind of trying to unpack, you know, you touched so many interesting points. And I love what you mentioned about this is like, you know, rainforest, right? It's an ecosystem by itself. It's all about coexisting, and everyone, every single bacteria plays a role. I mean, you mentioned the connection between gut, brain, but also immunity, immune system. You also mentioned something very interesting, which is fiber. We're going to talk about it in a minute. So about fiber, essentially. So basically, these bacteria, they feed off the fiber that we eat. And, you know, because this session is all about the myths and, you know, kind of debunking that and linking that to research. So I was reading, I mean, you will tell us a bit more about the guidelines and the amount of fiber that we should be eating. But the statistics, the sources out there suggest that only 9 to 10% of the population, and specifically in the UK, US seems very similar, only 9 to 10% of people eat the amount of fiber that we should be eating. Wow. Yeah. So can we just deep dive into this?
Yeah, let's. You're absolutely right with your statistics, and it's quite staggering. So let's just take things back. So fiber, I briefly mentioned, it's this type of carbohydrate which is found in plant foods. So your fruits and veggies, but also your whole grain cereals, nuts, seeds, beans, lentils, even spices contain fiber. And we should be looking to get about 30 grams of fiber a day. But you're absolutely right, Ari. Very few people are reaching that. It's actually between, I think, only they're making about 18 grams of that. And it's actually believed that our ancestors were clocking up about 100 grams of fiber a day. So we are way off at the moment from what they were achieving. And when it comes to fiber, I really can't stress the importance of it. You know, not just for our gut health, but for our overall health. The way in which fiber works, you're absolutely right. It is the food that your gut bacteria absolutely love. So we as humans can't break down this type of plant-based carbohydrate during digestion. So it passes all the way down into the large intestine, which is basically the final part of our digestive tract, really. And it's there that the majority of our gut microbiota are, and so they can feed on this. So you could consider fiber as your gut microbiota's kind of favorite food. And previously, you know, the message was simply that fiber helps you poo, but it's so much more than that. You know, evidence that really confirms the protective effect of fiber on a whole host of diseases, you know, cardiovascular disease and even cancer. There was this landmark study in this area that showed consuming just 8 grams more of fiber a day can significantly reduce your risk of heart disease, type 2 diabetes, colon cancer, and death from all causes, in fact. And that to me is phenomenal. I do not know a single drug on the planet that can produce those results. It is simply quite amazing. And if we look in terms of gut health and we look at that data, a diet that is particularly rich in fiber is associated with a more diverse gut microbiota. So I've mentioned there, hopefully, encouraged you to consume more fiber, but I just want to stress that when it comes to gut health, it's not just about eating that recommended daily amount, which is about 30 grams. And I just want to put that into perspective. 30 grams, you're probably thinking, what on earth does that look like? So that would be, say, 2 slices of whole grain toast in the morning with, you know, your eggs on top, a handful of spinach. Lunch might be a jacket potato with some baked beans, maybe a side salad, and then dinner, roasted chicken with veggies, maybe a sweet potato or something, and you're snacking on fruits in the day, or maybe some hummus with, you know, a couple of crudité vegetables, cucumbers, that kind of thing, and you're well on your way to 30 grams. So hopefully that just helps people understand what does that look like. But I just want to mention that, as I said, it's not just about the amount when it comes to gut health and fibre, because different dietary fibers work really differently. And you can kind of think as your gut microbes as being these sort of fussy eaters, and they prefer different types of fiber. So you need to get basically a mix of lots of different plant-based foods, so those whole grains, fruits, veggies, but also all your nuts and seeds and chickpeas and beans and lentils and all of that, that will then make sure that every single gut microbe is being fed appropriately. And that will then create that diverse, really rainforest ecosystem that we're all sort of thriving for. And this kind of idea of eating as many plant-based foods as possible came from one of the landmark studies in this area that showed that those who ate more than 30 different plant-based foods per week had a far more diverse gut microbiome than those who ate less than 10. So just remember, it's not just about, you know, I know we're all creatures of habit and always put the same things in our trolleys, but try and, you know, diversify your diet, because diversity in your diet really does breed diversity in your gut microbiota. And I just want to say on that front, my quick tip for something like this, because 30 plants, it sounds really intimidating, you know, and it can be confusing because you're like, I thought we were just meant to eat 5 a day. But just remember, it's not just your fruits and vegetables, plant-based carbohydrates, which contain fiber, span that whole spectrum. And I always try and say to clients in particular, you know, you can do some really simple swaps here that will just add more diversity, plant diversity into your diet. For example, if you're always grabbing, you know, or snacking on peanuts, maybe but buy the bag of mixed nuts. Or if you're always buying romaine lettuce, buy the mixed salad bag, you know, with some extra grated carrots or extra grated beetroot. That's fab. If you, you know, like a chili con carne, maybe not just adding kidney beans, but adding your mixed beans into that, or not just having whole grain rice, but the mixed bag of rice that has also quinoa in and that kind of thing. They're just some really quick ways to make some really simple swaps, just add some more diversity into your diet. And the final thing I'm going to say, Ari, because everyone hopefully will be really inspired by this chat and go off and be like, I'm going to eat 30 plants this week. Please remember to go low and slow, otherwise you're all going to be messaging me going, oh, it didn't work, I feel awful, I've got bloating and cramps and this kind of thing. And that's because you really need to give your gut microbiota some time to adapt to the new demand of fibre that is on it to digest. You can kind of think of it as, imagine it like a newly opened coffee shop, and you've got all these customers that the fibre lines up out the front, and, you know, you've got the person at the till, you know, taking on their orders, but, you know, they're very new, they might only have one staff member, and the process is very slow, and it's just gonna, that line of customers are gonna move through very slowly. Whereas as they slowly, like, add a few more, get some checks into the till, they're gonna be able to move, or those processes are gonna become a lot quicker, they're gonna be able to recruit more staff members, and, you know, that flow of customers is gonna move through so much more. And if you are inspired to up your fiber intake, make sure you also up your hydration levels as well, because that's really key for fiber. So yeah, hopefully I've inspired everyone to go and eat more fiber. You can see I'm very passionate about that.
Well, I love it. I love your passion, the energy, how you explain it. I love the comparisons. And I'm sure a lot of people listening to this feel the same way. So thank you so much for that. Also, very, very good, all these practical tips with the swaps, the adding diversity, so mixed nuts and mixed green leaves. Love it. So variety is key. I think we are learning that. But obviously with the tips you were saying, also take it slow with hydration. Perfect. Awesome. And I mean, so I think we are gaining more clarity, learning more about fiber. What happens when we move to another food group or carbohydrate, in this case, or fats, let's say, let's talk about fats, because there's a lot of misconception about, okay, bad fats, good fats. What is it really, from a research and nutrition standpoint, that is a good fat, let's say?
Great question. Yeah, I think first thing to address with this, especially in the gut health space, and for anyone that's listening that may suffer with sort of gut symptoms, is absolutely sort of high fat foods can be triggering for individuals with certain conditions, that particularly those with IBS, so irritable bowel syndrome. But really, my bread and butter is, and what I love is anything where I can provide positive nutrition, and what can we talk about adding to our diet rather than taking away. And fat is absolutely up there for me. The particular sort of healthy fat is omega-3 fatty acids. And we see in the research, this is another nutrient that our gut microbes absolutely love. It appears to be really important in kind of helping increase that diversity of our gut microbiota. And in other food groups that they seem to be loved to be chomping on is vitamin D, polyphenols. So polyphenols are these compounds found in plant foods that essentially give them their colour. And I'm just conscious that when you listen to podcasts like this and we're bringing in different vitamins and individual ingredients, it can then be really difficult to know, well, how does that translate onto my plate? And I think it's important when it comes to gut health in particular that we understand that there's no single silver bullet or nutrient or diet, in fact, that is going to be, you know, the key to solving, you know, your gut health or get that flourishing ecosystem immediately. And we know that there isn't this gold standard diet or the one and only best diet for gut health. But where the research does kind of lean towards is this overall dietary pattern, which encompasses many of the key nutrients that I've mentioned, so fiber, omega-3s, vitamin D, and these polyphenols, is actually the Mediterranean diet. So Ari, you've got no excuses. But what we see is that individuals following this Mediterranean style diet, this can diversify their gut microbiota. So the Mediterranean diet, Ari, you'll be well familiar. It's all your whole grain cereals, your fruits, your veggies, your extra virgin olive oil, lots of oily fish and seafood, nuts and seeds, as well as obviously, you know, the sunshine can help and just your general lifestyle out there. But yeah, that does seem to be one that I think it's always nice to think about, okay, well, what does the whole diet look like, rather than just focusing sometimes on key nutrients. So if anyone needs an excuse to pop over to Spain right now, there's one for you.
Lovely, that's so nice. But yeah, I mean, definitely, absolutely, and very important what you say, right? It's better to picture the plate as a whole, and therefore the reference to the Mediterranean diet. You mentioned something I find very interesting, which is about adding delicious and healthy foods rather than, you know, restricting. And I wanted to just move now to elimination diets, because this is something also that we hear a lot out there in media. There's misinformation. And if you could just briefly cover on that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So elimination diets, these can be a really important first step for patients to help them identify the foods that may be triggering their gut symptoms. But it's really vital that when they do such of an elimination diet, and particularly a FODMAP diet, that they are doing this alongside a practitioner, so that essentially they don't stay on that very restrictive diet for long. And that's because very restrictive diets can actually make symptoms far worse in the long term. And I'll explain why that is. As I mentioned, you can kind of think of your gut microbes as these fussy eaters, right? So they like certain fibers. Now, if your diet is really restricted, and as you said in the media a lot of the time, gluten, I often have clients going, no, I can't eat gluten. That triggers all of my symptoms. And it's got a bit of a bad rap. And that a lot of time people are thinking, well, why are you stressing whole grain cereals? Surely they should be eliminated. They're very triggering. But what you need to remember is when you do approach gut health diet, particularly in this way, it's likely then that there's only a minority group of microbes that are being fed. And that group will then start dominating the community. And then other skillful bacteria essentially aren't being fed with the fiber that they like. And they're going to start to starve and eventually die out. So overall, you're getting this reduction in the diversity of your gut microbiota. And then if you starve your gut microbiota like this by being heavily restricted, when you then do eat a very fibrous meal, or you do go for that pizza containing that gluten, and you lack so many of those microbes and therefore the enzymes that they would use to break down that gluten, that fiber, the fiber digestion is going to be so inefficient. And it's that inefficient digestion that can in turn trigger those gut symptoms like bloating, like gas, your altered poops, et cetera. So yeah, I think the key thing about gut health and why I love it so much is it's all about sometimes, a lot of the time, what you can add more to your diet. And, you know, it's hopefully for most people, you know, no, especially plant food will ever be off the menu long term. So yeah, that's really my two cents on the topic.
Yeah, appreciate that. Well, the next one I really want to mention is something also you're an expert on is probiotics, right? And here I would love that you give us an overview about probiotics, their role in this ecosystem with all these bacteria. I mean, probiotics are like bacteria, so how does that work?
Yes, exactly. So the exact definition of probiotics are live microorganisms that, when administered in adequate amounts, confer a health benefit on the host. So I know that's a bit of a mouthful, but really the idea behind probiotics is rather than just feeding your already existing microbes in your gut with, say, fiber, you can actually consume the live bacteria themselves. And there are many sort of fermented milk drinks in the supermarkets, as well as supplements, which are classified as probiotics. But there are some really key things which you should be looking for when choosing a probiotic, because I'm aware that there's so much out there, it can feel really daunting. Okay, how on earth do I choose one? The first thing I would say is you need to make sure the type, or what is referred to essentially as the strain of bacteria in the product, is named on the product. It's usually like an Italian name, like Lactobacillus and those kinds of things. And you also want to know how much of that bacteria is in the product. So you should be able to see this on the product as CFU number. So CFU refers to colony forming unit, and it's essentially the number of live bacteria in the product by the end of the shelf life. And you should be looking for at least 10 billion. If you do want a little bit more bang for your buck, you want to get a probiotic with a later sell-by date, because there's probably more live bacteria before it gets closer to the sell-by date. So there's a little tip for you. And then the other criteria is that the bacteria is, of course, live, and that they can prove that the bacteria reaches the gut alive. They have the evidence to show that. And the final part of the definition is all about this health benefit. So do the company or the probiotic that you're thinking of purchasing have a health benefit associated with their exact product and their bacteria strain? For example, do they have controlled studies demonstrating that the consumption of their probiotic increases, say, gut microbiota diversity? And I would encourage anyone listening to email the company. You know, don't be afraid to contact them and ask these questions to make sure you are getting, you know, what you're paying for, essentially. And I want to touch on this in a little bit more detail, because I know fermented foods are quite trendy right now, and they're often used synonymously with the term probiotics. But the definition, and why I gave you that long-winded definition, is because that the criteria that I've broken down really highlight the big difference between a probiotic and a fermented food. So most fermented foods won't tick all of those criteria boxes. So fermented foods are quite trendy right now. They're made through fermentation, essentially. They're products like your kimchi, sauerkraut, kombucha, kefir. And they have the same idea as probiotics, in that they are a way to add a source of live microbes into your diet. Or at least they can be. But it's important to know that not all fermented foods actually contain live microbes. And that's due to a number of processes that they undergo during their manufacture. So after being fermented, they'll then be exposed to heat, for example. So bread, that undergoes fermentation, but it then goes in the oven. And that heating process is going to kill off all of that bacteria. So unfortunately, things like bread and wine are all examples of fermented foods which don't contain live microbes. And it's much to my dismay, Ari, because they're two of my favourite food groups. So yeah, I think the key thing, if you do love fermented foods, is just check on the packet that it says, you know, contains live microbes, and hopefully it also lists the strain of bacteria that is in them. So yeah, there we go. Hopefully that just dispels a little bit of what the difference is between those two products.
Wow, I find this so helpful, Emily. I mean, to be honest, this is such a masterclass, because I'm learning a lot as well. But you're absolutely right. I mean, from a consumer perspective, right, we sometimes don't pay enough attention to reading the labels. I mean, you mentioned, right, the importance of the strains, the names, how much. I mean, thanks a lot for sharing about, you know, the amount, the 10 billion, the tips around that. And yes, this whole hype about fermented foods, right, and they are not at the same category that So I find this very helpful. I mean, something that you mentioned is don't be scared of emailing the companies, right? So this kind of connects a bit with the follow-up question I had, which is, where can we find reliable information? I mean, this is such a masterclass, but it's very hard to find, right? So what are your top tips as to how we can make sure that we are well informed?
Great question. And Ari, I completely empathize with you because I'm a sucker for marketing on food products, you know, and I think it's us trying to, unfortunately, take it on ourselves to find this information. So hopefully this will be helpful for everyone. I just, before I move from probiotics, can I mention one more thing?
Sure, absolutely.
Because I think that sometimes probiotics can get a bit of a bad rap, or not even that, I shouldn't say, but it can be difficult or frustrating for patients or customers in themselves when they try a probiotic, for example, and they don't see any effects, or they don't know what they're looking for. And so they're like, oh, that doesn't work. First and foremost, like, take a probiotic for at least 4 weeks before you give up. And I just want to make people understand that what works for one person, so, you know, if you are following nutrition influencers, so to go back off to your other question, Ari, that I know a lot of us, we go on social media and we absorb so much content from it. You know, what works for one person, particularly in the space of gut health, may or may not work for you, and particularly when it comes to probiotics. And that's because all probiotics work in completely different ways, and that's because they are strain specific. So, as I mentioned in the definition, you know, we classify bacteria all the way down to strain level. So one bacteria strain that might be effective at, say, alleviating constipation, for example, whereas a different probiotic containing a different strain won't have that effect. Instead, that one might have evidence which shows it can actually be really effective at alleviating maybe cold and flu symptoms, for example. So when you are choosing a probiotic, or if you're a practitioner listening, maybe recommending one, it's best to ask what health benefits do you want to achieve and check that the company has the clinical evidence to show that health benefit. But I just want to say one more thing, because probiotic research and gut microbiota research is always complicated by this fact that our gut microbiotas are totally different. So what works for you, Ari, might not work for me. And that's all because of what we're saying about this ecosystem. It's about how this community of microbes are all working together, which will determine whether or not a newly kind of introduced bacteria in the form of a probiotic will be good for you, kind of with the health concern that you are taking it for. So yeah, just another little addition on that front, because I obviously work in this space and I know how incredibly difficult it can be. And I think that sometimes probiotics are seen as maybe this silver bullet that people can just take, but really important to remember that anything when it comes to health and even gut health, there's never going to be this silver bullet. It's always more of a holistic approach to health and well-being that is going to do the trick. But yeah, so hopefully that's helpful. But back to reliable nutrition information, on the case of probiotics, and if you are interested in that space, then absolutely companies should and will have the scientific information that you require should you need it. But also going to your healthcare professional should as well help break down some of this. And also because a lot of probiotic companies can't actually provide consumers with a lot of their clinical evidence. And that's because of a number of regulations around this space. So I should have mentioned that, sorry. I always have my hat on. I work a lot with healthcare professionals. So I should say that a lot of companies won't be able to provide you with that information. But if they can provide you with, you know, the criteria at least of reaching the gut alive, the type and strain and the amount in the product, then you'll know that they're a fairly reputable source at least. But I think, yeah, this, with so much information on the subject of gut health, it can feel, and nutrition in general, it can feel so overwhelming and difficult to know, well, like, what's fact or fiction these days? You know, as a nutritionist, I've seen diet fads come and go. And I think today the new kid on the block is absolutely this diet centered around improving gut health. And although I love to see gut health kind of finally getting, you know, the limelight that it deserves, and dare I say it's here to stay, I think with that comes like a cascade of media headlines, which sometimes can just lead us feeling completely baffled. You know, previously, as I said, you know, we were told to eat five a day, and now I'm telling you it's 30 different plants a week. Or, you know, we thought gluten, you know, was the cause of all our gut problems, and now I'm saying, okay, eat more whole grains. You know, nutrition is never easy to get our head around, and I think that's because it's a relatively new science when we compare it to something like physics, for example. And there's so much we're still learning, and even in the gut health sphere, you know, we're only at the tip of the iceberg here. There's so much we're still learning day in, day out. I know I've mentioned social media a bit here, and I'm not against it at all. I'm on it myself. I absolutely love it. I, as much as I create on it, I am very much a consumer of that content as well. But I think when you are following people in the kind of nutrition and health space, just make sure that they are registered and at the very least sort of referencing what they're saying. And I would always be a little bit skeptical if anyone is very black and white about something in nutrition, because I'm yet to see something that is so black and white when it does come to nutrition. So yeah, just keep your wits about you there. In terms of nutrition education, I think I'll wave the flag here for sort of the British Nutrition Foundation, because I think sometimes we get caught up in a lot of fads and new trends that happen in the nutrition space, particularly in the media and on the web in general. Whereas the BNF, the British Nutrition Foundation, are a great education source for consumers, but on the real basics of things, you know, when you just want to filter everything out and you're just like, okay, what's that? How much sugar should I be eating? All of these things, that can just be a great way to just block out the noise and just get back to basics. So yeah, people could check that out. And I know, Ali, you mentioned that healthcare professionals as well listen to this podcast. And for them particularly, you know, they don't get really any nutrition education, particularly GPs, I should have mentioned, sorry, with medical professionals. And I know that that can be a real frustration for them, and more are really interested in learning more. I'm going to do a plug here, actually, in my line of work, that for the gut microbiota research and probiotics and just overall kind of nutrition and health as well. Everything from the latest research to the application of that science for the use in clinic when they are seeing patients. I would say that the department I run at Yakult, so the Yakult Science for Health, is a particular education hub just for healthcare professionals where they can dive a bit deeper into this. So that might be helpful for people as well.
Well, I'm sure it will be very helpful, and we will make sure to actually put the links, tag both platforms. But I think it's excellent points. Both hubs can be very, very helpful. And as you mentioned, Emily, this is a complex space, right? There's a lot of research, but it feels like, yeah, definitely, as you mentioned, red flag if someone is out there completely polarized, black or white approach. I just find that this is really an excellent kind of class, about, you know, gut health, nutrition in general, and how also as consumers, as you know, we can behave to make sure that we get reliable information. Also the personalization angle, absolutely key, right? So everyone is different and should try what works for them or not. But yeah, I mean, this is incredible. I feel like we could spend so many hours talking about this, and we might have to do part two at some point. I guess sadly we should start wrapping up, and basically you gave us amazing guidance and information, very, very insightful. And I'm now very curious to ask you, what do you do on a daily basis for your gut health?
I love this question. And I just want to say, I know I've waffled on about the science of gut health a lot in this session, but I just want to stress that whilst the science, yes, is complex, looking after your gut health absolutely doesn't have to be. I think it's important to remember that idea that there's no silver bullet for your health. And particularly when it comes to your gut, there are so many factors, not just diet that we've touched on, which can really impact the diversity in our gut. So Ari, maybe we can go into these in more depth on part two, maybe, because there's things that we can't control, like age, genetics, medications, but there are so many lifestyle factors which can really help, change our gut health. You know, too much stress, not enough exercise, too little sleep, anything of this sounding familiar, but they can also all massively reduce our gut microbiota diversity. And this is what I try and consider on a daily basis when I look after my gut. So if I had to list them, number one, when it comes to diet, is I make plants the hero of my meals. I'm not plant-based at all, but whenever I do sit down to a meal, I think, okay, am I feeding as many of those little guys as possible? You know, for anyone listening, just remember, you're never just eating for one. I'm not saying you're all pregnant, but you are feeding literally trillions of live microbes inside of you. So remember that. And the way I approach it is I try and replicate that rainforest on my plate as much as possible. So try and make it, you know, filled with plants, lots of different variety, as colorful as possible, because no more true is that saying you are what you eat when it kind of comes to your gut microbiota. So if we want that rainforest, we've got to eat that rainforest. Number two is hydration. I know I mentioned this when I was chattering it on about fiber, but hydration is really key to just keep things ticking over. And number three, I always move my body. I'm not like, you know, a fit person at all, but I love Pilates and just your gut microbiota love exercise. Exercise can independently change your gut microbiota composition. So that's another one for round two. Ari, we can go into that. And number four is I meditate. So you guys from this podcast, previous episodes, I think you touched on the gut-brain axis, but yes, it's really, really key to keeping your gut relaxed and making sure digestion's happening and everyone's happy down there. So a stressed gut and a stressed mind are all interconnected. So yeah, I meditate 10 minutes every day just to keep my stress levels down. And the final one is I try and get at least 8 hours of sleep each night. So they're really my core sort of five principles that I try and live by. It's nothing groundbreaking. You know, I haven't got anything fancy in there. Unfortunately, although this science is new and exciting, the principles that are coming out about, but from it, come back to the same old thing that we're saying time and time again. It really is all about just a healthy, balanced approach to life and diet. So, yeah.
Wow.
Well, I try and do.
Wonderful tips, Emily. And you mentioned before that it's of this holistic approach, right? Gut health, in a way, is this holistic overview. So you touch there all these points, which is wonderful. Definitely part two. I think we will need it. I love what you mentioned about movement. The meditation, the mind reset. Wow, so fascinating. Oh, I feel like
I've loved it.
It's really amazing, and I'm sure Emily, so lots of people, patients, users, clinicians might want to reach out or follow you. So how can they find you?
Yes, well, you can find, my name is very unique, so you'll find me straight away when you put it into Google, but I spend most of my time on Instagram, so you can find me on there. I'm the nutrition reporter on Instagram, so I try and debunk as many myths as I can on there, so hopefully that'll be helpful for you guys. For any practitioners that are listening and might be interested in a deeper dive, particularly into the probiotic space, they can reach out to me on LinkedIn, and yeah, we can sort something out through that space. It's probably easier on more of a professional setting through the work that I do at Yakult Science as well. So yeah.
Fantastic. Well, we will add the link to your Instagram and LinkedIn as well. But this has been amazing, Emily. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed every single second out of it. I made notes. I feel like I'm learning. I'm continuously learning from you. Big, big thank you. And just a final remark. I really love the comparison you made with the rainforest. So basically, it's all about this ecosystem. And remember, you're feeding trillions microbes every time. When I'm eating later tonight, I'm gonna be like, yeah, let's feed all this anyway.
Yeah,
I loved it. Thank you so much,
Emily. Thank you so much, Ari. I absolutely love what you're doing at Sano Health. So today has just been a real pleasure of mine. I've absolutely loved chatting to you and can't wait for round two.
Let's do this. Thanks, Emily. Wonderful.
Thank you. Take care. Bye.
Bye bye. Take care.